Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Fairbanks police shared results yesterday of an investigation of a June 19th incident in which officers killed a heavily armed man who opened fire on them in a field near Fairbanks Correctional Center. 21-year-old Matthew Stover of Northway was shot dead in an early morning exchange of gunfire with four FPD officers. At yesterday's press conference, Police Chief Eric Jukes said investigators were not able to determine Stover's intended target or his motivation, but that his recent internet searches were revealing.
He was looking at videos depicting violent armed robberies.
Jukes says Stover also searched weapons systems, ammunition, body armor, grenades, fuses, explosives, as well as police scanners and SWAT teams. Jukes also described and displayed an array of weapons and ammunition Stover had with him.
He was armed with an AR-style rifle. He had put in pockets of a tactical vest, four fully loaded 30-round magazines put into his vest. On his belt, he had a fully loaded Glock 9mm handgun and two fully loaded 15-round magazines.
Jukes says Stover also had a large knife and a total of 400 rounds of ammunition either on him or in a truck he drove to the scene of the shootout. The crew cab pickup had tinted windows and blacked out license plates. Police also displayed a mannequin dressed in clothing Stover was wearing, including bulletproof body armor and face mask.
There's no doubt in my mind, I don't think, or anybody's mind here, that his intention, he was ready to go out and kill.
Chief Jukes also played video captured by surveillance cameras at Denali State Bank and Fairbanks Correctional Center and a police vehicle camera.
When our officers found this man, they gave him space. You'll see they gave him space. They approached him cautiously. They did it very tactically. His reaction was to jump out of his car, turn, and as quickly as he could try to murder them. Plain and simple.
One of the videos shows the brief violent interaction in which Stover fires and police return fire, killing him.
Driver, this is the Fairbanks Police Department.
Both Chief Jukes and Mayor Jim Matherly thanked officers for stopping what could have been a deadly assault on the community. Mayor Matherly noted that a member of the public called in an initial report of a man in body armor outside a nearby Denny's restaurant.
It was the vigilance and the decisiveness of our citizens and our police officers which prevented tragedy in this case. I'd like to thank them all.
Mayor Matherly and Chief Jukes emphasized that the incident shows that extreme violence can happen in a small community like Fairbanks and that local police face that potential every day and have to be trained and equipped to deal with it. Chief Jukes acknowledged that a life was lost and that Matthew Stover's family and friends have suffered. Stover had no criminal history and had a good-paying job on the North Slope. After the incident, Stover's mother said he gave no indication of anger or violence prior to the shooting. Five inmates at an Alaska Department of Corrections prison near Anchorage overdosed on opioids in a 24-hour period earlier this week. According to the DOC, the overdoses happened at the Highland Mountain Correctional Center in Eagle River from Monday through Tuesday night. All five women are expected to survive, and as Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, DOC officials credit a rapid response administering the overdose-reversing drug Narcan.
DOC says the first woman overdosed Monday night, followed by four more Tuesday night at Highland, the state's lone correctional facility dedicated to housing female inmates. Ever since Governor Bill Walker declared a state opioid disaster in February, corrections staff have been getting more training on how to deal with overdoses. DOC spokesperson Megan Edge says that while drug overdoses occur from time to time in state correctional facilities, a cluster of five in a single day is uncommon.
The reality is we are in the middle of an opioid epidemic, and prisons aren't immune to that.
Edge says DOC's professional conduct unit is investigating questions like how the drugs got into Highland and whether the substance was heroin, prescription pills, or a powerful synthetic opioid like fentanyl. Still, she says, drugs are routinely sneaked into prisons and jails. And so correctional officers and nurses at the facilities are trained on what to do to save prisoners from an overdose, especially as they see more and more people addicted to opioids coming through their doors.
DOC is the largest substance abuse treatment provider in the state, and so that means that we need the tools and resources to do it.
That includes distributing emergency kits that include doses of Narcan at correctional centers and probation offices around the state. Edge says the kits were installed as a result of policy measures that kicked in after Walker's formal disaster declaration. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge was in the spotlight yesterday at the nation's capital as a Republican tax proposal, which includes an ANWR drilling provision, was unveiled. 11 Alaskans testified for and against drilling before the Senate Energy Committee. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Sam Alexander from Fort Yukon in Fairbanks cuts a striking figure in a congressional hearing, and not just because of his moose hide vest.
Like many Gwich'in, I served in the U.S. military. As a Green Beret, I deployed to Iraq to free the oppressed. Little did I realize I'd come home to find my own people's freedom under attack.
Alexander says drilling in the refuge would threaten the porcupine caribou herd, the animals his people depend on.
The caribou come from a place we call Ishikwatsankwantaikotlit, the sacred place where life begins.
And that caribou birthplace, it's none other than the coastal plain of the refuge, the so-called 1002 area, the swath within ANWR that Congress may open up to oil drilling. Next to Alexander at the witness table was Matthew Rexford, a leader from Kaktovik. That village is actually on the coastal plain within the 1002 area. Rexford says oil means jobs and a better standard of living for his people. He says his community also depends on subsistence hunting and the richness of the refuge.
Another of those natural resources is oil and gas, and lots of it. We rely on the bounty of the land and find sustenance within ANWR.
Witnesses discussed caribou populations and whether modern drilling techniques would or wouldn't harm them. Then senators, for the most part, asked friendly questions of whichever Alaskan represented the view they held on drilling when they walked into the hearing room. The Energy Committee is supposed to vote on an ANWR bill by mid-November. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Fairbanks Borough Public Library observes its 40th anniversary this evening. What began as the Episcopal Church Library in a log cabin on First Avenue has expanded to encompass two major buildings with outreach services across the interior. As KUEC's Robert Hinnon reports, the librarian who helped shepherd that growth will participate in this evening's observation.
Patsy Gavin was attending an American Library Association meeting in the late 1960s when she was approached by what she says was a hippie.
He was the state librarian. He was wearing a beard, a turtleneck, and beads.
He also had what would prove to be an irresistible offer to head up the small library in Fairbanks on the banks of the Chena River. After scoping out the territory, Patsy Gavin left her librarian position on the East Coast and with her young adopted daughter headed north. What attracted her, she says, were the possibilities. In the cramped quarters of the 2,200-square-foot cabin, she began an oral history program and jerry-rigged a bookmobile to serve people who couldn't make it to town.
We invented, maybe it was a bread delivery truck or a milk wagon, I don't know.
She would also work with Borough Chairman John Carlson on an expanded building and a branch in North Pole. She says Carlson was a wonderful boss who embraced many of her suggestions. The state in the early 1970s was beginning to feel the possibilities North Slope oil would bring. But Gavin also wrote a grant with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Alaska Native community to begin a program training Alaska Natives and other minorities to become librarians. She was later recognized by the NAACP for that work. Now in her 80s, Gavin says she feels rewarded for a life in public service.
And it's a privilege to be a public servant. It really is.
Gavin will be at the 40th anniversary ceremonies this evening, beginning at 6:30 p.m. at the Nolwine Library she helped to shepherd into being. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
And I'm Dan Bross.